The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning. We are here with our first case, 10-1554, in the matter of the application of Buckeye Wind, LLC, for a certificate to construct wind-powered electric generation facilities in Champaign County, Ohio. The appellant, proceed. You're Mr. Van Clay?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I understand that Ms. Napier is not with you this morning, correct?
That is what I am told, Your Honor. I am told that she was tied up in traffic.
All right. Well, you'll have the floor all to yourself then.
All right. Thank you, Your Chief Justice Connor. May it please the court. I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. To a large degree, this case is not so much about whether the conditions actually included in the certificate are adequate to protect against wind farm hazards, but whether or not there were any conditions at all placed in that certificate to guard against specific harms that that wind farm will cause if it operates. For example, with regard to noise, more than 1,000 families are going to be affected by the noise from this facility in decibels, we call them DBA for decibel A weighted, over 34 DBA when they're in their residences and in their yards.
Can you describe what that's equivalent to, something that we would, you know, understand from everyday life?
Your Honor, I've heard various comparisons to other things we understand in various everyday life. For example, a normal conversation is a statement that I've heard compared to 34 dBA. Understanding, of course, that there's really not a neat analogy between wind farm noise of the same sound level as other types of noise because of the thumps and the bumps of wind farm noise that makes it more annoying and more disruptive of your normal speech if you're in the yard, for example, or if you're trying to sleep in your bedroom.
Is it comparable something to like a helicopter sound? Because that's kind of a thumping sound.
It has the same kind of resonance, Your Honor. It's that low-level bumping, thumping sound. And sometimes there's a whining, screeching sound, too, under high winds that is especially annoying at night to people that are trying to sleep inside their houses.
Okay, thank you.
And the important thing about wind turbine noise with regard to its level is that it's very intrusive, and you could use an analogy. For example, if you're in a car at a stoplight and another car comes up alongside of you, even with its windows closed, and it has a very low bass thumping going on, you can hear that right through your car windows, even though they're closed. And wind farm noise is very similar to that. It penetrates walls.
Counsel, are there turbines that will meet the decibel level that your clients find to be acceptable?
Yes, Your Honor.
And they're fully operational at their maximum if they are emanating a noise level that is somewhere less than 35 decibels?
Yes, Your Honor. And the way that works is it's not so much how much noise is coming off the turbine, but how far the turbine is away from a neighbor's house.
That's what I was going to lead to my next question, because the appellees say if we operate turbines according to our certification at the decibel level that the appellants want, or below that decibel level, that they currently, the 35, we can't do it. It's just, we're precluding the operation of the turbines. And your solution, I'm presuming, is locate them farther away from the property line and the decibel level will not be an issue. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note, Your Honor, that the wind farm design can be fluid. There are other leases that Buckeye Wind actually already owns for land in the area that could be used as alternative turbine locations if some of the turbine locations in its current design are disqualified because they're too close to houses.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we tried to inquire more into that during the hearing, and we were blocked from doing that by objection from opposing counsel and sustenance by the ALJs. But there was enough evidence in the record to show that there were other leases already possessed by Buckeye Wind in the area, which could have been used for alternative turbine locations.
Well, are they, do you know whether they're leased as alternatives or as additional sites?
That wasn't said, that we were prevented from finding that out during the hearing.
Did Mr. Van Clay, did you present evidence of what the setback should be? I mean, the commission has set a setback for the turbines and so on from the residences. Have you provided an alternate with expert testimony?
Yes, Your Honor, and we presented alternative expert testimony that could have presented one of two options. For example, simply stating that the wind turbines have to be placed so that no more than 5 decibels above background would be experienced by a non-participating property owner, a neighbor.
Does that translate into a change in the location?
It can, yeah. You can readily translate dBA volumes into distances. So that was one alternative that our expert presented. Another opinion of our expert simply said, well, if you don't want to figure out how many dBA equates to what distance, you are safe if you have the turbines 1.25 miles away from non-participating property owners. So that could be kind of a default if you didn't want to figure out otherwise how loud the turbines would be at specific distances from them.
I
was going to say, so you're saying there should be no residences within 1.25 miles of any turbine? Is that what you're saying?
Well, not exactly, Your Honor. First of all, for those property owners who are participating in the project, that is, they are leasing their own land to the project, those people are free to be closer if they want to voluntarily agree to do that, okay? So that will take care of most of the houses within close proximity of the turbines. But secondly, the 1.25 miles is presented as a default, okay? In other words, the alternative would be either figure out how far the decibels over 34 dBA will travel, which could be, for example, a mile instead of a mile and a quarter, or 3/4 of a mile instead of a mile and a quarter. You could do that, or in the alternative, if you didn't want to go through the exercise of figuring out how far the decibels traveled, you could just pick 1.25 miles, and that way you would be sure that you would cover all of the.
You mentioned that a number of people are already leasing their property. How many are objecting? How many people are objecting to the location right now?
Your Honor, I don't really have an exact number. I can tell you that there are thousands of families living in these townships, 1,000 of them living within objectionable noise limits. At one time, we understood that the population of the county was roughly half in favor, roughly half against the wind project. However, that was before Buckeye Wind announced where the turbines were going to be, so that people couldn't see how close to people's houses they were going to be located. And there was testimony at the hearing that public opinion swung against Buckeye Wind after that occurred.
Council,
we don't have any exact numbers.
There are several factual disputes. It seems to be, you know, how far do the turbines fly if they fall off the windmill, the ice shear, things like that. Are you claiming to us that there's, because we usually defer to the Commission on factual issues, are you claiming that there's an abuse of discretion on the factual basis, or are there other legal issues that we need to resolve in this dispute?
Both, Your Honor. For example, with regard to blade throw, the Commission failed to adduce evidence as to how far those blades will fly if they come off the turbines. So instead of putting a condition in the certificate that established the amount of distance you had to have between the turbine and people's houses or property lines, they deferred to their staffers to figure that out after the certificate was issued. And that we believe is a legal question for the court. That is a legal failure of the Power Siting Board under Revised Code Section 4906.10 to ensure that the facility presents the minimum adverse impacts on the population.
Well, Council, aren't the setbacks contained in Section 4906?
There are some minimum setbacks set in statute, which were repeated in the regulations.
Yes.
But both the statute and the regulations specifically say that the Commission is responsible on a case-by-case basis
so
to determine.
So you want it tailored to your desired specifications as opposed to the statutory minimum set off here?
Right. It was never intended that the statutory minimums be applicable from case to case. That was just the threshold that had to be set. And then on a case-by-case basis, the Commission was responsible for determining.
Do you know how those minimums were established?
I don't specifically know, Your Honor. It was done during the legislative process, and I don't
Which
really know.
Which presumably would have had experts come in and testify before the subcommittees, et cetera, et cetera.
Maybe, Your Honor. Okay. I don't really know.
All right. The question about the number of residents of this county that are in objecting to this, would that be the membership of the UNU?
No, Your Honor. We purposely kept the membership of the UNU tiny, small, to provide us with more workability in handling the case.
And how many members for the UNU do you have?
We have 9 families in the UNU. But we made no attempt to represent, by and large, all the objectors.
But you say that there's another large contingency of residents who are opposed to the windmill siting or windmills in general?
Well, I suppose there's some of both. Certainly.
Oh, I mean, that's speculative.
No, I have no way of knowing, Your Honor.
Okay.
There are hundreds and hundreds of letters in the public file for this case, in which people either express their opinions for or against the wind farm. And I suppose that if we looked through all those letters, we would get some idea as to what people basically thought, individually thought, as to their opinions. But I have no way of knowing specifically the breakdown.
All right, Council, you're well into your rebuttal time.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Welcome. Mr. Wright?
Mr. Wright, before you get started, I had a question that I'll just ask you. With regard to the set-off, the setback is 500 feet, and there was evidence in the record that the turbines that were used from the expert standpoint was a smaller turbine than that which is being planned in Champaign County. Could you address both those issues, please?
I would be happy to, Your Honor. We've heard discussion of minimum setbacks. The minimum setbacks in this case, and they were derived through a statutory formula, are roughly 550 feet to property lines of non-participating landowners and well over 900 feet to actual residences. And I think setbacks is really what this case is all about. But before I get into that, let me answer your second question, Your Honor. The application discussed 3 turbine choices, and today there are numerous choices, and they range from A to Z. The applicant will choose a turbine model, when it's ready to start. Actually, it has to report to the board 60 days before construction. That is a condition. And it will choose, typically it chooses the turbines based on cost and availability. And we're talking about a world market now for wind. So the same manufacturers that are supplying turbines in Europe are also supplying turbines over here. So the actual choice, the board indicated, would have to be reported to the staff not less than 60 days prior to the commencement of construction. And it had to meet the noise parameters that were set forth in the noise assessment that was presented by the applicant in its application. And in fact, my opponent is arguing for a noise standard of roughly 34 decibels. I believe Justice Kupp asked the question, what does that mean in everyday life? The record does indicate that normal conversational tone is about 50 to 60, a level of about 50 to 60 decibels. That's well below that, and I would submit to you that their noise level of 34 dBA is frankly not much higher than the average noise level that is expected at any non-participating household under the applicant's noise assessment, and that is up to 42 decibels. At nighttime, when people are going to be having their dinner, watching television and sleeping. So it's not a whole lot different. Where we differ with our opponents is their desire to have some hard and fast standard. Mr. Van Clay pointed out time and again, noise is a very complicated issue, and this has to be addressed on a case-by-case basis, and that's what the board did here. While I'm thinking about it, I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for
I wonder if you're going to do that.
Mr. Petrikoff. Thank you very much.
Could you comment briefly on the propensity of these blades to get away and how far they travel and the potential danger? And the other issue I'm interested in is the bond requirement of $5,000 per turbine. Would you comment on those for me?
I would be happy to, Your Honor. First of all, Your Honor is referring to what's commonly called blade shear. And there is evidence in the record dealing with blade shear. The board found two key factors with respect to that issue that caused it to believe, and it did have a condition on this point, caused it to believe that this was simply a very minimal issue. Those two factors are, one, today's turbine technology is very advanced, and it's certified to international standards. Now, what does that mean? That means that they're designed today to shut down under extremely high wind conditions, to shut down if they detect vibration in the blades because of the presence of ice, things like that. So the turbines will shut down under conditions that are likely to give rise to that kind of a condition, Your Honor. And the second point I'd like to make there gets us back to setbacks. The minimum setback to anybody's house, again, is 3 football fields, over 900 feet. But let's not get stuck on the minimums here. The average setback throughout the footprint of this project is almost 2,100 feet. That's 7 football fields, nearly 7 football fields. And the board put a lot of stock in that in terms of the remote likelihood of blade shear, icing, those sorts of things being issues. And it also put a lot of stock in that in terms of sound. Again, holding the applicant to the noise parameters that they established in their application.
Well, counsel, let me ask you about a remedy. And you talk about a case-by-case analysis, and we have minimum setbacks, which are the ground floor, and then you say the average setback is 2,100 feet.
Yes, Your Honor.
And say it is erected on a property owner's property, and the neighbor finds it to be intolerable and wants to complain about that. Now, this thing is already there, functioning, erected at some cost, I would imagine, and some revenue to the landowner, et cetera. At that point, does the landowner have the opportunity, the adjacent landowner, have the opportunity to complain about it and have a process by which it would be either removed or moved?
Yes and no. The answer is yes, there is a complaint, a two-step complaint process that is, again, a condition to the certificate, one of 70 conditions to the certificate, and that would provide a landowner with an opportunity to approach the applicant and to approach its staff about noise, whatever it might be, whatever their concern might be. And that's important to note. The board wants a continuing dialogue here between landowners and between the applicant.
So they complained to the turbine company.
They would complain to the applicant, the operator of the wind farm. And the no part to your question, Your Honor, would be, are there remedies? Yes, there are remedies. Removal, probably, it is possible that there is going to be post-construction mitigation. That could require removal of a turbine. That is correct.
Who makes that decision?
The board would make that decision ultimately.
What board?
The Ohio Power Siting Board.
Okay, so the landowner that is the land or the complainant, let's just call him that, has a remedy on a case-by-case basis to ultimately end up at the siting board and say, this is intolerable because, or
yes,
this is unreasonable or unlawful because.
That is correct, Your Honor. And I would like to address one other point that's somewhat related to this. My opponent has discussed the exchange of post-certificate, and suggesting, I think, perhaps that might raise due process concerns. Well, the process in this case, of course, has already been had. 3 weeks of hearing, 40 witnesses, several thousand pages of testimony. What happens post-certificate is we move into an enforcement phase. The decisional phase is completed. And what happens at that point in time is minor tweaks get made out in the field, often at the landowner's request, I might add, to move an access road or whatever it might be. That is done in conjunction with the board staff, and any minor change cannot violate the spirit or letter of the order itself. And I might further suggest to you that anything major, anything that would affect an area that's not already been studied, a change in turbine technology, a significant movement of a turbine from one location to another that might affect new landowners, those would all be taken up in what's called an amendment process.
But isn't it
and that's
more
new
than,
process?
Isn't it more than that? Because what the board is leaving to the company and staff, we don't even know what size these turbines are going to be, and so there is additional information that the staff will work through with the company that the landowners are not allowed to participate in, because it's all done outside of a public hearing where they have the ability to contest the evidence.
Well, Your Honor, they have had the ability to contest. Again, if a turbine technology other than one that has been discussed in the application, which has been fair game throughout a hearing process, is chosen, that, and there's a condition, this is condition number 49 of 70, there is a condition that requires that turbine be capable of meeting the noise parameters in the applicant's study. Again, that's already been studied. That's what the hearing was about. So we're simply into an enforcement phase, and it's the board's staff's responsibility to implement. There's nothing funny going on here. This is the way the process works, and this is the way I would submit to you that practically
Counsel,
it must work. Yes, sir.
I suppose there's no answer to this because we don't even know what kind of a turbine is going to be erected. Do we know how tall it's going to be?
We know approximately how tall it's going to be. Yes.
Approximately.
Yes.
Is there an outer limit on how tall it can be?
Typically, these are going to be upper range of about 398 feet, the tower itself.
I mean, that's what they're building today. But if they decide, hey, we've got an ability to go higher and longer blades, can they do that?
That would be a determination of materiality, whether or not that was a material change from anything that had already been studied. And if that determination was made, that would go back before the board with a new hearing. That was my response to
who regulates these wind farms once they're constructed?
I'm sorry, who?
Who regulates the wind farms once they're constructed?
By statute, and this is a major utility facility as opposed to an economically significant wind farm, by statute, the board continues to regulate everything for up to 2 years. It would continue to regulate decommissioning, and I want to get back to Your Honor's question, if I may. Throughout, basically the regulation, the conditions in this case are cradle to grave. Now, in a fossil fuel plant, for example, the EPA steps in after year two and continues to regulate because that's primarily emissions-related issues.
They don't have an infinite lifespan. I've heard 20 years is the estimated lifespan.
20 to 25 years is my understanding.
Right. And who determines when they've hit functional obsolescence?
That will be a determination that they will have to work with the board staff on to determine whether or not.
Is there a state inspector of wind turbines who goes out and says this thing's getting too old and creaky, it needs to come down? Does that even exist at this point?
I don't know that there is a state position created for that, Your Honor, but there are certainly experts who can make those determinations. And in fact, that goes hand in hand with the bonding requirements.
That's cold comfort if you can't tell me who's responsible.
Well, Your Honor, we have to learn to crawl before we walk. This is the first case to come before the board of this type. And wind is a public policy matter at the General Assembly. I have to believe that the expertise is going to continue to develop, and I believe a lot of it is there. It's just a lot of it is international at this point in time. One of their experts was actually a Brit. So,
well, it's evolving even today. I heard on the radio coming down that the governor's convened a special thing up at Ohio State that Patel's participating in to determine choices in terms of energy and how we deploy that in this state. So you're licensing them while the state's deciding, do wind farms even make sense, I guess?
Well, I think Your Honor has to remember the function of the board here. The function of the board is not to find ways to not build plans to meet the public policy. It's to mitigate the impacts, and we believe with the 70 conditions that were part of this certificate that we did that. And Justice O'Connor, your question about the...
That's O'Connor over there. I'm O'Donnell.
Oh, I'm sorry, Justice O'Donnell. I apologize.
I wish all look alike.
Your question about the bonding requirement for decommissioning. The $5,000 is an initial determination. It's made in year one, when nothing presumably is going to be decommissioned. And it ramps up on a sliding scale every several years. It's revisited by experts, I might add, who are involved in these kinds of bonding requirements.
Who determined the adequacy of that bond?
The bonding initially was, I think that was negotiated. As part of, not negotiated, but it was determined, I guess, by the board's staff in conjunction with the evidence that had been presented in the application.
Is the bond for the protection of the property owner where the turbine is located, or is there the intent that this is, going to be available to the adjacent homeowners?
I think, Your Honor, the bonding would be probably specific to that particular property owner who has the turbine that's being decommissioned sitting on his property.
So the bond is not going to help the neighbors in any way, correct?
Well, the bonding requirement is initially set at $5,000 per turbine. So other neighbors that have turbines on their property would the kitty that's built up, so to speak, would also apply to those as well.
But
it would apply for everything.
Property owners that have a turbine situated on their property.
Yes.
Yeah, the bond is for decommissioning, for taking it down. Bond isn't for it's the operating of it. The bond.
Yeah.
Is
yes. I'm sorry. Yes.
If the property fails, if there's a bankruptcy, that money's available.
That's precisely the purpose behind the condition. Okay. We would request that you, respectfully request that you affirm the decision.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Petrikoff, your time has been totally consumed by your co-counsel. I will allow you a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Howard Petrikoff, and I represent the Buckeye Wind Farm, which is the intervening appellee. I just want to answer two or three questions that have been asked about the decommissioning process and also about the selection of the turbines. The turbines that will be built out there will be the turbines that are listed in the application. We've modeled on those turbines. Those will be the turbines. Now, basically, turbine technology is like buying a cell phone. You know, that the model that we've listed here may not be available by the time we go out to purchase. If that's the case, we'll have to show that the one that we're using has the same characteristics in terms of size, power, noise, everything else to the board.
Where are these turbines manufactured and the blades manufactured? Where
are the blades? Well, I quite frankly, all over the world. There are some that are made here in the United States by General Electric. There are some that are made in Spain and Portugal. And I don't know the model. Those are the ones that I'm aware of, the model numbers. I'm sure that there are also some that are made in the Western Pacific. But basically, we will have to build to the specs that what we've applied, and that includes Justice Pfeiffer, the height. The height is, if we go to change the height, we would have to put a new application in. So that's all set. In terms of decommissioning, the decommissioning starts at the $5,000 because there's nothing out there to decommission. And then basically every 5 years we have to do an engineering study to show what the cost of taking it down is, both with salvage value and without salvage value. And then the bond is based on that. The bond is basically to the Power Siting Board.
Well, let's work from the front end. You know what it costs to put them up. What's it cost to put one up?
Oh, a turbine?
Yeah.
A couple million dollars, easily.
That's the cost
of the turbine, the tower, the erection.
Okay, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking you what's the construction cost on getting it up. Not the turbine cost.
Oh, like the labor that's involved in putting
then renting the cranes and everything that you need to do to get it up.
Yeah, Your Honor, I know what the total cost is. I don't have a breakdown as to what the labor cost
would be. It'd be a good deal more than $5,000, wouldn't it?
Not net, no, because it's going to have a salvage value when you take it down.
No. I'm asking you the cost to bring in the cranes, the workmen to assemble it, because it would presumably be comparable to the cost of tearing it down.
Your Honor, I don't know the labor costs in there, but I know that what is important is whether there will be enough money to cover it. And I want to indicate to you that the $5,000 plus the salvage value should be more than enough.
Counsel, what about the township roads that are going to be probably pretty well beat up with the big trucks and the heavy stuff coming in? What assurance is there that there's going to be money available to repair those? And I imagine Champaign County has plenty of township and county roads that are going to be affected.
We have to get a road use bond from the county,
and
we will get one. Otherwise, we won't build it. We won't be able to build it.
Mr. Petrikoff, some of the deferred issues, the question of whether there will be a public hearing on things that may have been deferred, or as your co-counsel was talking about, the enforcement issues, who determines when the public hearing has to kick in? Who, this idea of materiality was raised, and who makes that determination?
Okay, that would be the board. And let me take you down one gradation into the operation. We have a certificate. You can't build anything until you get a certificate. And that's because you don't want to do any ecological damage unless you know this is going to be a project that's going to be safe and in the public interest. We've now got the permit to do that. We've now proven that there will be no harm, and that this is really a wonderful way to generate electricity because it has no air emissions, no nuclear wastes. Now when we go to build, we have to present construction diagrams for approval to the staff. And basically the staff will look at them. If those construction diagrams don't match up with the application, they're going to reject them. Or if we find out that, you know, we want to make a change, we would have to apply and say, you know, either this is an inconsequential change, we'd like to make this so that we can get the drawings approved, and the board would either say it's consequential or inconsequential. If it's a consequential change, if, for example, Justice Pfeiffer, we wanted to raise the height, We'd be back in for a new application.
If I understood the evidence presented, and I might not have, but the sighting of three more turbines, was that part of the amendments that was that would not be considered a material change?
We can only build the ones that we have sighted and approved.
All right, so that was incorrect then. There's no, you were not going to defer the siting of three more turbines in the future and then not have that subject to a public hearing.
That's correct, Your Honor. We have a set number of sites. We can only build there. I believe we built in an extra site or two, which we may or may not use. But anything beyond the 57 that we have, we would have to come back for a new application.
Counsel, there was information that was given that you have leased alternative land potential for additional turbines, or are they in the alternative to the ones you've already planned, part of the 57? They say you could just take these and locate them someplace else. That's the argument that I heard.
Yes, and Your Honor, you have to appreciate that when you're a developer and you go to the hearings, everyone says, I love these, but couldn't you put it someplace else? When we went out to lease the land, there is some redundancy. You start by saying, where's the wind blowing? Because that's the resource we can't change. And then you look for the best locations. And sometimes the best locations, you just run into a landowner and it says, no thank you. So we have an inventory that's larger than what we build on. Those sites are there, but if you don't mind, Your Honor, I'd like to take it back. There is no way with any of the inventory here that we could make an LD90 plus 5, that's the 34 dBA, but the real standards is basically ambient plus 5. There is no way that we could build that on any land that we have in Ohio. At a mile and a quarter setback, just think of this. We have an acre, we've got our turbine, and you have a mile and a quarter in each direction. Where in Ohio are you going to find 2.5 square miles with nobody living there? I mean, that'll work in Montana and that'll work in Alaska, but...
Well, you might be able to find it, but there's no wind there to use.
It may not be any wind there. That's correct.
Counsel, that raises a larger question that's not in this case, is do wind turbines even belong in Ohio? Are they better suited for somewhere else? But that's not before us. Question I have is the property owners who signed leases and are allowing you to construct on their property presumably favor this, or they wouldn't have signed. What kind of promise are they getting in terms of revenue from these?
They get a royalty. It is very significant, and that's why Mr. Honor's here from the Farm Bureau. You know, particularly for farmers, this is wonderful.
How significant? What is it? Does it depend on? Well, is it a promise of you're going to get X number of dollars a year or a month, or is it it specific or not?
Yeah, basically, it works a lot like oil and gas. You get there's a sign-up bonus generally, and then you get a royalty. You get a percentage of the worth of the electricity.
And what's the royalty in these? What percentage?
Order of magnitude in dollars now. It's likely we'd be talking more than $10,000 a year.
$1,000 a year?
Ten.
$10,000 a year. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Van Klee.
We've heard my colleagues do their best to assure the court that if changes are made to this project, that they will somehow be subject to renewed hearing at the commission. That is not the case. Let me just read to you a sentence from condition 45 of the certificate issued by the board, which authorizes Buckeye Wind to move Turbine 70, and it says all changes will be subject to staff review and approval prior to construction. Your Honors, and that is repeated in several instances throughout the certificate where various provisions are to be determined by the staff without hearing.
Staff of the siting board?
Yes.
Okay, let me ask you about the question that I asked opposing counsel about the mechanism for an adjacent property owner or maybe anybody that claims to be adversely affected by a turbine. And there is the ability on a case-by-case basis to complain about it and ultimately end up at the power siting board to present your case?
Not exactly, Your Honor. First of all, there is a complaint process. There is for any government agency, you can always complain. And there is something in the certificate that says there has to be a complaint process set up here. But after that, who knows what's going to happen? There's no formal process by which the board is required to act on complaints. Buckeye Wind just has to tell the board or tell the staffers what the complaints are. And that is a very poor substitute for doing the siting correctly in the first place to prevent the complaints. That's why we have hearings before the board to determine what those proper conditions should be.
And they had those hearings, right?
They had the hearings, but they have included within the certificate a host of conditions such as establish the setback for blade throw. That will be done by the staffers afterwards.
Since they did have the hearings, we are, you know, give deference to their results unless it's shown to be unreasonable or unlawful, correct?
That's correct. That is a standard.
And are you arguing to us that it's unreasonable or unlawful or both?
Both. First of all, with regard to unlawful, the statute, Revised Code Section 4906.10, says that the certificate must establish that the facility will present the minimum adverse impacts. That's the lawful part of it. They haven't done that here where they've instilled post-hearing certificate conditions that can be established by the staffers without putting those in the certificate up front. They have failed to comply with their statutory duty to issue a certificate that provides for the minimum adverse environmental impact. Secondly, it's unreasonable to issue a certificate that allows staffers, after the certificate had been issued, to make important decisions such as how far does the turbine have to be away from somebody's house to avoid a blade from being thrown on that person's house?
And that's unreasonable because that's the mechanism that the siting board has in place?
Well, that's unreasonable because it hasn't been established in the certificate. There's nothing in the certificate that protects the public against blade throw. That is sloughed off to the staffers after the certificate was issued.
But it hasn't been established. The response to that, you know, and we're getting a little factual here, but there's a built-in mechanism that is like a turnoff switch. And if the blade starts to vibrate due to a loose connector, it's going to shut itself off. If there's above a certain amount of wind, it's going to shut itself off. If there's ice accumulation on the blade, it's going to turn off. So there's these mechanical safeguards.
Well, there are some of those, Your Honor. They're not foolproof, unfortunately. They may protect against something like ice throw, for example. However, even the board knew that there was a significant risk of blade throw, or they wouldn't have included a provision in the certificate instructing the staffers to establish the setback for blade throw after the certificate was issued.
Counsel, do you know, because we've heard they went out and they signed up folks within this area that's going to be wind farm, I assume within the geographical boundaries, the outer boundaries, there are folks who didn't sign up. Would that be true?
Yes, entire subdivisions are included within the turbine areas.
They live inside the outer boundaries of the turbine area, but they didn't sign up.
Actually, outside of it and inside of it, there are turbines all around entire subdivisions of homes that didn't sign up.
And we've also heard if you signed a lease, then you don't have any right to complain about how close they are to your house or that kind of thing. Is that correct?
Right.
But if you signed a lease, you still might not have a turbine. Is that correct or wrong?
Well, I'm not sure that there's a guarantee you get a turbine if you signed a lease. I would think that in most cases, if Buckeye Wind is paying for a lease, it will put a turbine there.
Okay.
But as we also mentioned previously, there are other lease options that Buckeye Wind has, according to testimony in the hearing, that are available for these turbines. There was certainly no testimony adduced during the hearing to say that these lease areas are not available or that they're not suitable. As I said, we were blocked from inquiring further into that issue. I would also mention, Your Honor, that although counsel keeps saying that for these post-certificate arrangements made by the staffers, that those staffer decisions will be guided by the certificate, well, in the case of something like noise, there is no specific limit in the certificate. Even counsel for the Power Siting Board says in his brief, the certificate does not set a specific absolute decibel level, but only presents design goals that are almost like a target that Buckeye is attempting to achieve, but not necessarily achieve. So how is a staffer going to determine that when he agrees to allow Buckeye Wind to relocate at least three of the turbines pursuant to the conditions of the certificate closer to somebody's house, how is that staffer going to know whether the noise level from those relocated turbines, which those landowners at this point have no ability to get a hearing about, how would that staffer know whether that relocation complies with a design goal that is almost like a target? There is nothing enforceable about the noise limits, about the noise parameters in this study.
Counsel, and your argument is that these items in which the board has deferred or punted to the staff do not allow the landowners to take to the board and get a board determination, but it's simply a matter of staff discretion?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, I read from Condition 45, which specifically says the staffer will make the decision on the relocation of that turbine.
Without subsequent board approval?
Yeah, it says nothing about board approval in here.
That's a concern. Unlawful, as you...
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah, that is a great concern to us. Just a matter of cleanup, my co-counsel, who was involved with the legislative process for the wind turbine standards, informs me that there was no expert testimony that was provided to the legislature with regard to the minimum setbacks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We will take the matter under advisement and you will be notified of our decision. Thank you.